This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. A recent survey by Braun Research about chores has gotten a fair amount of attention. While 82% of the parents in the survey reported that they did chores when they were kids, only 28% said that their children were required to do jobs around the house or apartment. What explains this apparent disconnect? Why have children's responsibilities for taking out the trash or doing the dishes or folding the laundry or helping with the vacuuming fallen out of favor? What is lost when kids are not asked to pitch in on household tasks? And what do they gain if they are? Many questions. We have two guests who have joined us. Madeline Levine is a psychologist, author of The Price of Privilege, and more recently, Teach Your Children Well. She's also co-founder of the Challenge Success Project at the Stanford Graduate School of Education. Madeline Levine, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us is Richard Weisbord. He's a child and family psychologist on the faculty of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and School of Education. He wrote a book called The Parents We Mean to Be, and he joins us from the studios of Harvard University. And Rick Weisbord, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can I begin with you, Rick? Because I was thinking many of the shows that we do have two sides. If there's a legitimate difference of opinion on a particular issue, we try to get a pro and a con. On this topic, on this issue, is there another side? Is there any good reason why children should not be doing chores?
It's a good question. I cannot be the con voice on this.
I understand.
I mean, I think chores are good for kids. There are very few Cinderellas out there. I mean, there are some kids, and there are big race, class, and culture differences in this. There are some kids who are doing a lot of chores because they have to, or they're babysitting, taking care of younger siblings, or taking care of sick relatives. And, you know, the hope would be that they would be relieved of some chores. But in middle class and upper class communities especially, I think the big salient issue here is that kids aren't doing enough pitching in, enough helping out, enough chores.
And why, Madeline? And as I said, there's been a lot of attention on this research about chores. There's a disconnect between parents and their children. Why have chores kind of taken a backseat to other things that happen in the household?
Well, I think the answer to that is partially the answer to your first question, which is what's the other side of the argument. If you talk to parents, the other side of the argument would be that it's, quote, wasted time or time taken away from the real work of the new childhood, which is all about academic performance. So I think parents have become increasingly concerned that if their kids are doing chores, they're not getting much out of it. I was recently asked a question down in Silicon Valley, where I'm from, which is, should my child learn how to make a bed? And it was a serious question, and it was because the family was wealthy and they had people making their bed and didn't sort of get the bigger picture, which is that kid, one, learned a whole bunch of things like competence and self-esteem and being part of the family and part of the community in making it, and that child would then go out into the world where a roommate or a spouse or somebody else might expect them to actually have some life skills like making a bed.
To you, Rick, and just picking up on that, I mean, I don't like to do my chores around the house, but they need to be done. Is it a waste of time when it comes to children?
I absolutely don't think it's a waste of time. I would add to Madeline's list, I mean, I think academic pressure certainly is a big piece of this. I think there are other pieces as well. I mean, I think, some kids their days are packed. I mean, they're doing tons of extracurricular activities of one kind or another. Sometimes that's about achievement. Sometimes it's about both parents working. And I think some parents, because kids are so busy, are reluctant to give chores. I also think when parents are feeling guilty because of divorce or many other reasons, they can be reluctant to put any kind of burden on their kids. But I do think, in general, that the benefit is great. I think part of becoming an ethical person, a moral person, is getting into the habit of helping others. And it's a matter of practice in many ways, that kids have to do this regularly. It has to become a reflex to pitch in, both in your home and in your neighborhood. So, it concerns me that this is falling away.
Mm. Is there a way that the parents can I'm not sure, require, demand, ask that their children do chores? Is there a way to ask for that or require of that that doesn't create a compliance problem? Rick, if I can toss that first to you and then to you, Madeline.
Yeah. You know, it's sort of in our modern culture, there is a compliance problem. But, you know, in many cultures around the world, and again, in many cultures in the U.S., there isn't this kind of compliance problem because it's something that's expected of kids from very early ages. It's just woven into the fabric of everyday life. And I think when you weave it into the fabric of everyday life, you don't have the same kind of compliance problem. I think the other thing that happens is that sometimes in the U.S., when kids will do a chore, when they will set the table or clear a dish, you know, parents give them a trophy or they have a parade. It's like there's a big celebration, you know. And, you know, the point is not to over-reward this stuff. The point is to make this stuff expected and woven into everyday life. And then, you know, I think you have much less of a compliance problem.
How do you see that getting? And I think, you know, we all I remember from my own childhood fighting against the things that I was required to do, hoping to get out of them, trying to sneak out of the house without doing them. How do you suggest, Madeline, that children think or even their parents think of this as just sort of part of what it is to be part of a family?
Well, you know, if you look at a two-year-old, they're perfectly happy to follow you around the house with a dish rag. And, you know, part of how kids grow up and have a sense of identity and a sense of morality is because they're internalizing what they see adults doing. So I'd make the case that kids sort of naturally have a desire to be helpful, and that it's been kind of taken out of them because we overemphasize other things. We don't make a big deal out of being helpful. We don't, you know, unless it's like going, if you're middle or upper middle class, unless it's going to, you know, make your application to college look better. Mm. There's not a kid in America who doesn't know how to get out of a chore. And that's by simply saying, I have my AP chemistry class tomorrow. My AP chemistry test. And mom, who's been working all day long, says, don't worry about it, sweetheart. I'll do the dishes. And I think it's a terrible mistake. I think that the idea that kids are so special that they don't have, they will always be part of communities. That's what we do. That we're social beings. And the necessity of, like Rick says, just weaving this in from day one. And of course kids will buck up against it at some point. They're supposed to buck up against stuff. It's our problem. I think it's the parent's problem who says, you know, I just can't stand to see my kid unhappy, which is something I hear all the time. And my response to that, frankly, is if you can't stand to see your kid unhappy, you're in the wrong business, because part of growing a child is allowing them to have experiences where they're not happy, and learning that they can tolerate it, and they learned that partly because you can tolerate it. So if they're crabby about doing a chore, so what?
Do you think, Madeline, I'm sorry, just a quick follow-up and then to you, Rick. Yeah. Do you think, Madeline, that parents are afraid of conflict, or it's just easier sometimes just to do it themselves?
I actually think parents are tired.
Parents are tired.
And they're just as overscheduled as their kids. And I think that communities have become basically places of competition as opposed to collaboration, and there's a risk in making your kid unhappy if that's your best friend or if that's who you go to for nurturance or solace, and I think that's what a lot of parents are doing.
What do you think, Rick?
I was just going to reinforce Madeline's point and your point, Marty. I think it is an issue of not being able to tolerate your kids being happy. It's also often an issue of not being able to tolerate your kids being angry at you. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the conflict issue that you're raising, that, you know, can when a kid is your best friend and your kid gets angry at you, it feels like a real rupture in the relationship. And, you know, as Madeline said, in the final analysis, we have to be parents and not best friends. So this is the tough work of parenting. It's critical work. Yeah.
Well, and what I hear you saying, Rick, is that you don't need a parade if the child, you know, does the dishes or something. But is there a way to sort of frame it or reward it or thank a child or maybe make it part of a family task day or something that would make it feel something like a child would want to do and also has this kind of moral benefit that I hear you both talking about? Rick?
Well, I would really caution against rewarding everyday expected chores. I think uncommon acts of generosity and kindness we absolutely should reward. I'm trying to think of a concrete example. You know, sometimes, and I wasn't great about this with my kids, so I don't want to put myself up as a model for this. I mean, my kids did some chores. I think they could have done more, but you know, in the winter, sometimes my kids would go out and help people shovel out their cars or push out their cars. And, you know, that seemed like an uncommon – I mean, it should be common in a sense, but it was going out of their way, and sometimes it required quite a lot of work. I would tell them I think that's a great thing to do. But, you know, if you're taking out the garbage or if you're doing the dishes, I just think it's, you know, it's really important for kids not to think that that's something that merits a reward of some kind.
Madeline, well,
Rick,
go ahead.
It doesn't for us, right? You know, when we do the food shopping or the laundry or whatever, you know, nobody has a parade for us because it's expected.
No.
It's expected because you're the parent, and it's expected because that's how the house runs. So I really agree. I'm very opposed to paying kids for chores because it makes it special as opposed to expected. And I agree with Rick. You save special for truly special things.
Well, and we're almost up on a break here, Madeline. Just a quick follow-up to that. If a child either doesn't do it or says they don't want to do it or they hate your guts, I mean, what do you suggest a parent do?
Well, it depends on the age of the child. But, you know, I think it's a place that parents really kind of need to hold firm to the request. And, you know, if the child's belligerent or oppositional or whatever, I treat it the same way I would treat any other piece of belligerent oppositional behavior. And if it's a young child, it's probably to, you know, put him in a room and let him cool off and then have a discussion about it. I think we talk to our kids about all the wrong things. You know, kids are constantly saying to me, the minute I get home from school, my mom wants to know how I did, which means, you know, my academic achievement. Mm-hmm. We talk way too much about academics and performance and way too little about responsibility and being a good person and meaning. So an older kid, you know, I'd say if you don't do it, you lose the car, you lose whatever. It's part of being a family. It's expected. But I would have a conversation about those facts.
Well, let's take that very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, talking with two psychologists in this hour of Radio Times about the importance of children having household chores. That's Madeline Levine. Also with us, Richard Weisbord, and we're getting an explosion of Facebook comments. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times about what you think about kids doing chores. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about chores and how they can shape a child's character and why children should do them. Richard Weisbord is a child and family psychologist. He's on the faculty of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and School of Education, wrote a book called The Parents We Mean to Be. Madeline Levine is a psychologist as well, co-founder of the Challenge Success Project, and that's at Stanford Graduate School of Education, author most recently of Teach Your Children Well, and also a book called The Price of Privilege. And I do want to read some comments first, but Rick, I want to go back to you and just make sure that our listeners understand the point that I think both of you are making, which is making this connection between doing chores and being an empathetic person. Can you make those connections for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think the I don't think chores are magical. I don't want to suggest that, you know, all you need to do is have your kids do chores and they're going to become moral people or empathic people. There are a lot of things we need to do to help our kids become empathic and moral. I do think that when you are pitching in and helping out, it becomes a disposition. So you are much more likely to have the instinct, the reflex to to pitch in, to help out, to think about what other people need. I think it becomes built into you in a certain way. And just to pick up on something that Madeline said earlier, I think it's also really appropriate for kids to understand that other people are doing chores. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I have said to my kids, when they complain about doing a chore, like, look how much mom does. I do a lot and mom does a lot more. And I want them to know that, and that's part of building empathy, that other people, their lives are created in many ways on the work of other people. I'll say one other thing really quickly about this.
Sure.
Harvard students, I think, are, for the most part, I think Harvard students are really nice people. But some of them, leave their crap in the dining room and the cafeteria and in the hallways because they don't think somebody's got to pick that stuff up. So I think putting on kids' radars that there are these other people that are pitching and helping out, doing chores, and that's what we should all be doing, becomes very important.
Let me read a Facebook comment. This is from Ed. He said that, yes, I had chores, and I'm a bit dismayed to say my kids did not. Did they miss out? Well, my two kids did very well in school, but they don't know some common household types of things, like it's just not and not just them, their friends as well. He says, I used the term faucet one time, and my daughter's friend, she went to Princeton, asked me, what's a faucet? That's pretty wild. You can be very well educated but not know, Madeline, what a faucet is. I think there's a message in that story.
I think it's while Rick and I have talked a lot about community and competition and morality and stuff, I think there's another side to this, which is just what this person's tapping into, which is, when you know how to do something, you feel good. You may not like it as a kid, but there's also a whole bunch of life skills that are learned by cooking a meal, making a bed, doing the laundry and that kind of thing. And so, I think we have a group of kids that are incredibly talent, these are your kids at your school or at Stanford, Harvard or Stanford, who know a tremendous amount about the world of academics and performance and know very, very little about, how the world actually works. And while there's something humorous about that, there's also something, really disturbing to those kids, which is they don't know how to make their way in the world, and they become increasingly aware that nobody is going to make it for them. And we have tremendous rates of emotional problems on college campuses now, and I think this is one of the reasons. I mean, it's a small part of it, but it's certainly one of the reasons that kids simply don't know how to make their way without adult intervention, what they see as adult intervention. And this, this is not good for a sense of self and a sense of efficacy in the world.
I see another Facebook comment here. This is from Mary. She says, I think agreeing with you, both of you, I think kids are missing out because they're not learning basic survival skills. Laundry, basic cooking, cleaning a bathroom aren't hard, but they are learned skills which require practice. And if you learn them before your teens, it's one less thing you need to learn when you're in your 20s living completely on your own for the first time. And I can't imagine that either of you disagree with that. Rick, let me just pick up on something you said earlier about, and it sounds like we're having kind of a conversation about privileged kids or middle class or upper middle class kids, but that there are a lot of kids who perhaps from more low income families who have a lot of jobs around the house, a lot of expectations to help the family out. And I just want to have you flesh that out for us a bit.
Well, no, I think that's right. I mean, there are cultures where and communities where kids are expected to pitch in all the time, sometimes by economic necessity, but also because of cultural norms and expectations about those things. And, it's a class matter. It's also a culture matter. I mean, when immigrant families come to this country, they tend, there's much more of a sense of collective responsibility often than the non-immigrant family, their non-immigrant family counterparts. And part of that collective responsibility is pitching in. One conflict that happens is often the kids in those families come into contact with their non-immigrant American peers who are not expected to do chores and are not expected to pitch in. So, you know, I've certainly talked to immigrant parents who will talk about low-income parents who will talk about this and how their kids, you know, will come home and sometimes bristle about having to do chores because they are coming in contact with this culture that's much more organized around kids and much more around kids' self-esteem and much more around promoting kids' achievement sometimes at all costs. So, you know, that's really where the tension is in immigrant families, in a place where immigrant families struggle to toe the line.
Madeline, I scribbled down the word neglect. I mean, and that's a very loaded word, of course. But do you think it's neglectful to not have children do chores?
Neglectful. I think it's bad parenting. I don't know that I'd call it neglectful. I think it's bad I think it's bad parenting. And I think, you know, there's so much certainly in upper class and middle class families about entitled kids and worrying about kids being entitled. And I just had this really funny experience of a 26 or so year old kid in my practice who comes in who had had very big birthday parties. I live in a community that has, you know, animals and Ferris wheels when a kid has, and that's what he had had his whole life. And he has his dream job down in Silicon Valley. He comes in despondent, and I ask him why. He said, well, it was my birthday. And I said, well, what happened? And he said, well, all I got was a cupcake from the kid who sits next to me. And I'm figuring, like, wow, that's pretty cool that somebody even noticed that it was his birthday. And I said, so why are you so unhappy? And he knows it's a ridiculous answer, and he kind of shuffles and says, well, I was hoping for a llama. Meaning, you know, this is what used to come to his house. And you know, this is the kind of disappointment this kid has. And I think the kinds of things we need to keep in mind is life holds, unfortunately, inevitable tragedy, disappointment, and challenge for kids. And that one of the ways they learn to manage that is in small, titrated amounts of unhappiness and disappointment and challenge that they get along the way. And if they don't get that, if parents don't allow for those kinds of disappointments and falling down, that kids end up incredibly hobbled when they go into adulthood and expecting llamas, you know. So if you're disappointed about not getting a llama, can you imagine how you're disappointed for its heartbreak or being fired or illness or things like that? Yeah. So I would just call it bad parenting.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, was he cracking a joke, Madeline, about wanting a llama, or was that?
You know, not really. Yes and no.
Wow.
You know, the way all these kids have some awareness that some of what they're saying is just absolutely ridiculous out in the world, and some of it plays to this very childish, entitled, you know, I'm sure both Rick and I have a million stories about kids whose expectations are, you know, just profoundly and woefully out of line with reality.
And that's Madeline Levine. She's a psychologist. Also with us, Richard Weisbord, who's also a psychologist. And we are talking about the importance of children doing chores. And we have a bunch of comments here. Radio Times at WHYY.org. I see a lot of Facebook comments as well. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments about kids and chores? We actually have an email, Rick, from someone who wants to remain anonymous. She says, I think requiring chores are essential, but I have no idea where to start. I'm trying to get better myself with the housework, but I don't want to come across as a hypocrite when I can't get my own chores done. My kids are 5 and 7. Any suggestions? Any thoughts, Rick, for our anonymous emailer there?
You know, I don't think it's sort of hard to know the context here and how much chores this person is doing. I mean, my guess is that if you're running a household, you're doing a lot to maintain that household, that this is a person who is cooking dinner and is probably doing dishes and laundry and, you know, all those things that, you know, they constitute chores. So my guess is that this person is doing chores, mm-hmm. and probably, you know, there's sort of an imbalance here of expectations. And I think what Madeline and I are suggesting is that there shouldn't be such a great imbalance. It shouldn't be just parents doing for kids all the time, that kids should be doing for parents, too, and doing for the family. And that, you know, my guesses in this situation is that there just needs to be some recalibration so kids are doing some chores that are roughly equivalent to or come close to being equivalent to some of the things that this parent is doing, and some of this problem will disappear.
Madeline, do you have a position on things like chores and allowance? Should those be disconnected? Should there be any connection between those two things?
I hear myself sounding kind of tough, which doesn't
okay.
surprise me. I absolutely not getting paid for chores. Nobody pays me, as I remember the last time I went to buy toilet paper for the house. So it feels to me like, again, paying a child for their ordinary part of being part of a community. That's what being part of a community is. It's an expectation that the community doesn't function without people chipping in. And I do think, you know, I'm curious to hear what Rick thinks about it. I do think we are just woefully lacking in a sense of community, particularly in more affluent communities where everything has become a competition. Everything's a competition. I win, you lose. It's a zero-sum game. And I think there's a very clear message when you pay for grades or, you know, all kinds of things are being paid for that I think are kind of on the wrong spectrum. So, no, I wouldn't pay a child for their ordinary chores. Kids want to make money as they get older. They want a car, for example. I don't love parents going out and buying a car. I think a kid should work, you know, not to buy the whole car, but to have some ownership and some contribution. And so a kid who does special things around the house, yeah, sure, I pay them for that, but not for making their bed and taking out the trash and doing the dishes.
Are you that tough, Rick?
I wasn't that tough. I had an interesting conversation with my son, who's my oldest son, who's now 25. I told him that I was going to be on the show, and he said to me, you know, I'm going to require my kids to do more chores than you required us to do.
Oh, that's interesting. I appreciate your honesty there, Rick.
Yeah, and he, you know, he gets it. He feels like he could be a little lazy, that, you know, we do too much. She doesn't do enough sometimes. And he sees now, I mean, he would not have seen this 10 years ago for sure, but he sees now how important it can be. I just wanted to pick up, if it's okay, on one of the things that Madeline said about community. I mean, I was, you know, interviewing a couple who were debating whether they should let their daughter quit the soccer team. She was 16 years old, 17 years old. And I remember the mother said, you know, let her quit. She's not having any fun anymore. And the father said, but it's very important for her college. She's a very good soccer player. It's very important for her college resume. And you know, I realized at one point that neither of them asked the question, does she have an obligation to the team?
Interesting.
And I don't, you know, I remember a few months later, I'm talking to my wife. My daughter's in a dance group and she wants to quit. And I said to my wife, you know, let her quit. She's not having any fun. And my wife said something like, you know, excuse me, Mr. Moral Development. We're not going to, we're not going to just let her quit this dance group. I study this stuff all the time. I think about it all the time. And still I fall into this kind of thing. So I'm just reinforcing Madeline's point. I don't think we tell kids that they have responsibility to their teams as communities, to their classrooms as communities, to their schools as communities, to their neighborhoods as communities in a way that we once did. And that it's very important for kids to feel a part of things that are larger than themselves. We do not, for a variety of reasons, their well-being and their morality and their capacity to engage in civic life. I mean, both of those things. It's really important not to be too self-focused.
Madeline, Rick, look, I just want to comment. You know, I'm touring around. I'm calling you from Ohio, and I was at a school, the first school I've been to in the last 7 months that teaches civics. I mean, we don't teach civics anymore in the vast majority of schools. It's as if that whole part of American life has been kind of written out of the curriculum, and I think that's unfortunate.
I want to read another email. This is from Joan. She says, our son is now 21. He has ADHD and was oppositional, so it was always a struggle to get him to do his chores, but we persisted. What was so appalling to me was his regular comment that began in middle school, I'm not your slave. Of course, we responded with some of the comments suggested by your guests, but I never would have thought of saying such a thing to my parents. I appreciate that email from Joan because it raises a whole host of issues. Madeline, about a minute or so away from our second break here. Anything you want to say in response to Joan?
You know, it depends on the age of the kid. I mean, well, I sound a little bit tough. I have a good sense of humor, and I'm not your slave, or you're not the boss. You know,
you're not the boss of me.
At 14 is exactly the same as you're not the boss of me at 2, and we don't get all exercised about it when our kids are 2 and say it. You know, you're not the boss of me, whatever. Go back to your own adult work.
What do you think, Rick?
No, I I agree with Madeline. I just also think, I mean, this kid may have been being funny or ironic. I mean, it's but
I think
that
Jones, the sort of saying, I would never say that to my parents. I mean, that you can say that sort of a pro and a con, right? I would never be that overt to my parents, and maybe I would never be that disrespectful of my parents.
Yeah, I mean, I do think some parents are, I mean, this is a, you know, another issue that's related to this, are, you know, allowing kids to be disrespectful and rude to them. And again, this may be a comment that was made in a close relationship that was intended to be funny. So it's hard to know what the meaning of the comment was. But, you know, I don't know why we would ever let kids be disrespectful with us. I mean, and I think, you know, I talk to a lot of parents who, for whom it's sort of assumed, but this is the most, one of the most important relationships they're going to have, and we're an authority in their lives. Why would we ever let them be disrespectful?
And that's Rick Weisbord, who joins us along with Madeline Levine. We are talking about respect and chores and morality and taking out the trash. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Madeline Levine. She's a psychologist, co-founder of the Challenge Success Project. That's at Stanford Graduate School of Education, author most recently of a book called Teach Your Children Well. And she wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Price of Privilege. Also with us is Rick Weisbord. He's a child and family psychologist on the faculty of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and School of Education. And he wrote a book called The Parents We Mean to Be. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499 to join our conversation about chores, doing chores. And you, again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Madeline, we have another Facebook comment. This is from Denise. She says, in our house, chores are part of life. Each child has a chore which rotates weekly. If they refuse or, quote, forget the chore, then they do everyone else's chore the next day. It works pretty well for us, and they understand that chores are not that big a deal. Does that seem like a workable solution or approach to doing chores?
Yeah, that's tough. I think it does. And, I actually think, Marty, that we're talking about kind of a – we're talking about the reality of chores, but we're also talking about bigger issues of how the relationship of parents and kids have changed. I was thinking on the break, like, I hope people didn't hear me as saying, yeah, it's fine for your kid to be rude to you. It's certainly not what I'm saying. But I think we've had, you know, the bigger issue is that we've had this profound change in the relationship between kids and parents. And I think people are having difficulty navigating that, and because it's so different from the way most of us grew up in terms of our relationships with our parents. So it's a great question, but it's interesting that somebody would want to say, is this okay? And, you know, this is what keeps me traveling around and Richard speaking and me speaking, is that I think that people are very confused about, you know, how to navigate this difference in the culture. And I think it's very confusing. And I think there are community pressures that make it tough to be the parent who, you know, holds the line and insists on chores and doesn't and sends their kid to work at Target instead of in the summer instead of, you know, starting a water sewage plant in somewhere in Africa. So I think the kinds of questions you're getting are emblematic of the confusion people have about navigating these relationships.
Well, Rick, since you were disclosing some about your family, I'll just say very briefly, and this was a long time ago when my son was a teenager and one of his jobs was to take out the trash, which he, like a lot of teenagers, would forget to do. And I remember my husband at one point saying, you know, this really hurts my feelings. I mean, you're part of the family here. And when you do this, you are being not just disrespectful to me, but also sort of discounting me as a member of the family. It was quite a personal thing to say. I have to say it worked. But since you were talking about, you know, the family, the team, the idea of saying to children, this is what we do as a team. This is what we do as a family.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, your husband did a mature and helpful thing in this situation. And, you know, I just returning to Madeline's point for a minute, I mean, you know, as a country, we're in the midst of this giant social experiment. You know, we want to be closer to our kids. And, you know, this has been going on for some time, for 25 or 30 years. I mean, you know, closer than our parents were to us. That's especially, I think, true of dads these days, that they want to be closer to their kids than their dads were of them, but of moms too in many respects. And I think it's a wonderful experiment in a lot of ways. You know, I'm interested in both of your thoughts about this, but, you know, in many ways it is true that parents have much more fun, relaxed time with their kids. They're much more willing to disclose a lot of their own feelings with their kids, and sometimes inappropriately, but usually I think appropriately. Kids are sharing much more with them. Kids generally say they feel very close to their parents. And there's some great things about that. There's some great things in terms of how we organize and monitor our kids' lives and the degree to which we know them these days, you know, compared to 50 years ago and how much parents knew their kids then. But it does create these problems. I mean, this is the confusion I think Madeline's talking about, where, you know, how do you be close without being a best friend? And how do you be close while still making real demands and holding your kids to high ethical expectations and standards around, you know, their responsibility for other people?
Do you want to weigh in on that, Madeline? We got a lot of people that want to join us as well.
Yeah, sure. I will quickly. I mean, I do think that it's confusing. I had a mom come into my office recently, Rick, with a picture of four pairs of shoes. And very proudly, she says to me, this is how close my daughter and I are. She's happy about it. She can't pick out a pair of shoes without my okay. Her daughter's 24 years old. I mean, that is just, like, sad. I actually think that there's an awful lot of good things, I agree with you, but I think there's an awful lot of loneliness and emptiness in parents because of people moving around and divorce rates, all kinds of things. And I think kids are being used to fill these holes in parents' lives. When we sit weekend after weekend after weekend in the bleachers, watching kids hit a ball, and I had three sons, so that is exactly what I did. And in retrospect, it seemed to me, what a pathetic, passive, uninvolved portrait of adulthood that was, that I had nothing to do but work all week long and then sit in the bleachers week after years watching my kids play. And if I could have redone it, I would have spent some of those weekends being an adult with my husband, with a girlfriend, reading a book, making adulthood look attractive instead of passive.
That's so interesting because, you know, there are complaints that parents don't show up at their children's games. It feels like you can't win for losing on that one.
Well, in upper middle class communities, I'd say most parents show up for almost all games. And I think it's some loss to their own parents' development. Like I said, you could spend that time watching your kid hit a ball. And this, again, is in communities where parents have the luxury to show up weekend. And the financial resources, by the way, because it's expensive to field your kids' uniforms and select soccer and all the travel that goes with it. But in those communities, I think most parents are showing up most of the time, often behaving poorly, best thing my kids ever did was switch to lacrosse because nobody knew what the rules of lacrosse were, so nobody could scream at the referee anymore.
Well, we're going to save that for a whole other conversation there.
Right.
Let me get Christina from Glenside to join our conversation. Hi, Christina. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. I just have a quick comment about chores and allowance. I have a 9-year-old and 4-year-old, and when they asked me, can we get an allowance for our chores? And I said, absolutely. In exchange for doing your chores, you are allowed to live in my home. Several other parents have now used that in our neighborhood, and it's effective. They get it.
They get it. And so sort of end of discussion there, Christina?
Pretty much, yes. That's it. They can't really argue with that. They earn their keep in their house just as I did growing up.
What do you think about that, Rick?
Well, no, I think earning your keep is a good kind of ethic to instill in kids, and I think there are a lot of other reasons too. You know, the ones that we've been talking about. I mean, I think it is about earning your keep. It is also about learning to coordinate your needs with other people's needs, and learning to balance what other people are doing with what you're doing, you know. So it's the pitching in too. So it's, you know, it's a bunch of different things.
Thanks for the call, Christina, to Radio Times. Another Facebook comment, this from Allison says, can we talk about the gender aspect of this? I've lived with dozens of people, and the only ones who thought they didn't have to clean or to care for the house were guys. I feel like women learn the sense of obligation to others, but men just don't. Do you agree with that, Madeline?
I don't know. I raised 3 boys, okay. And they did their chores. Is there a differential in the way boys and girls treated? You know, yes, historically, a severe one, a little less so now. But I have an interesting thought about that, which is, while my boys did whatever that was expected of them in the house, once they got out on their own, they weren't so neat.
Oh. Well, you're not alone in that.
While they were in the house, this was the expectation. And like Richard's talking about, and by the way, Richard, I just absolutely love your book. So thank you so much.
Yours. Well, thank
you. What a love fest we're having here.
I wanted to make sure I got that in because I give it to so many people because it's a point of view that doesn't get, so much of what gets written is about academics, and I'm a contributor to that. But I think what really matters is meaning and ethics, and there's not enough being said about it. So,
Rick, I mean, are there, maybe this has changed, and, you know, boys' chores, the boys mow the lawn, girls do the vacuuming. Is that still hold, and is there a problem with that?
Well, you know, again, there are also, I think, big race class culture differences in this one.
Right.
But I generally think it's true. I think that girls generally, and again, I'm sort of speaking very broadly here, do tend to be more inclined to pitch in, especially to take care of younger siblings, and often to be like their moms, who are doing a lot of household chores and considerably more than the dads are doing. So in terms of the kind of modeling that's going on, I think there is some gender gap. But that's not to say, you know, Madeline's an example of this, that if you expect your boys to do this, they will do it. And it's really important. And it's important to dads to think about what they're modeling in this regard, too.
Mm-hmm. Let me get Sharon from Downingtown to join our conversation. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. One of the things that we don't talk about that much is how you're making the kid feel valued by his participation in chores. I grew up in a house where my mom had a chronic illness, and she was sick a lot. And the only way it worked was for all of us to pitch in and just do what needed to be done. So by the time I was the oldest, by the time I was 13, the kids were responsible for the majority of the shopping and the cooking and the cleaning because we knew that if we did that, then mom was going to be more functional for the fun stuff. But our parents were so proud of us, and you know, it was such a feeling of family putting together to get done what needed to get done that when I see these other kids who feel sort of entitled and, oh, mom just does all that, I realize they're missing out on just that general, you know, feeling of benefit that comes with that.
That's a great story, Sharon. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Rick, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful story, and I really appreciate it as well. I mean, one thing that I would add is that, you know, and this is sort of related to the chores discussion that we're having. I think we often tell kids when they help out these days, and sometimes I did this when my kids were young, you know, you should be nice to other people or help out other people because then they'll help out you. Mm-hmm. Or you should pass the ball because then other kids will pass the ball back to you. But that makes a kid's happiness what's important in the end. Not their morality, but their happiness, like whether it reverberates back to them in some positive way. And the caller's comment about a chronic illness is that, you know, there are going to be times in our life where we may have to do things that don't make us happy, like take care of somebody who has a chronic illness. And to weave that expectation into a family's life early on and to make it something that is, when kids are contributing in the way this caller was contributing, to make it something that parents do recognize as very valuable and meaningful seems like a profound life lesson to me.
Sharon, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Madeline, we have a tweet from Rio saying, my parents taught me about responsibility and chores by having me just ask people, do you need any help with anything?
Wow. Rio was a lucky guy. You know, yeah, that's great. It's cultivating an awareness that you're not the only person in the world. And I think that kids end up feeling so focused on. I thought was it Sharon who told the story about, you know, just before Rio. And I think she makes the nice distinction, which, you know, may have gotten lost a little bit, that there's a huge difference between being proud of your child and bribing them. So, you know, what obviously stayed with her was the sense of pride. And we're absolutely entitled to be proud of our children when they do good things, when they pay attention. And we have to teach them to do that. And just on a personal note, because I want to throw it in there because it just happened, my kids are grown. I've had many moments of pride in them, academic moments, athletic moments. The biggest moment of pride came 2 weeks ago. My son is at a job. He gets his bonus. This is my youngest son. Comes home, doesn't say a word about it. And I said, his name's Jeremy. I said, Jeremy, so did you ever get that bonus? And he says, yeah. And I said, well, what are you going to do with it? And he said, I donated it.
Wow.
And I said, really? You know, who'd you donate it to and how come? And he had donated it to Make-A-Wish. And he just looked at me and he said, Ma, you know, Ma, it's the right thing to do.
Oh, my goodness.
That was the best parenting moment of my 34 years.
Well, lucky him, lucky you. I always like to end on a high note if we can, and that seems like the perfect place to end our conversation. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Madeline Levine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Richard Weisbord, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
A pleasure for us. Yeah. A really good conversation, yeah. I have to say. Yeah. And Richard Weisbord is a child and family psychologist. He's on the faculty at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and School of Education. And again, the author of a book called The Parents We Mean to Be. Madeline Levine, a psychologist, author of The Price of Privilege and Teach Your Children Well, co-founder of the Challenge Success Project at Stanford Graduate School of Education. And it looks like a lot of conversation on our Facebook page. You can check that out. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.